This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Obviously, you know, we can look at this and it's very easy to go, this is a crazy circus. She's obviously done horrible, horrible things. But at the end of the day, this is a conspiracy case to commit murder. Obviously through her dead brother, Alex Cox, who is obviously not here anymore. What evidence do we have? What do we know that's out there that directly links Lori to Alex and motivating him or telling him or instructing him to kill her ex-husband? I mean, is there a lot? I mean, on the surface, you can look and go, well, obviously this is part of it, but what do we have? I mean, it seems like it could be a slam dunk, but is it really?
You know, for conspiracy, you need evidence of an agreement between two people to commit a crime. My understanding is that there are alleged text messages between Alex and Lori talking about missions and talking about removing obstacles to this, you know, to Lori ushering in the apocalypse, and that was veiled language for killing Charles Vallow. On top of that, you know, Lori did have a motive. There was an insurance policy that the prosecution is saying Lori wanted to avail herself of. And so those things together, also Lori said that Charles would die soon and wasn't too disturbed after he died. I guess she had a pool party shortly thereafter. So there is significant evidence, but not a slam dunk.
A pool party after. Oh God. Yeah.
A weird party.
Makes me think of Corey Richens and the party at that house right after her husband dies too. People are interesting. So you also have to prove, don't you, that Lori, through these texts, through these missions, through these all the religious fervor language that they used, that she believed that this had something to do with murder. That might be a stronger hill or a taller hill to climb than we think, because I don't know that, you know, she's contemplating murder as murder in the context of reality. Could she argue that she believed that it was not murder, that they were talking about this mission and Alex took it upon himself to construe these words is to murder someone, and it wasn't her who sang it. It was just, no, you know, buy him a ticket to Panama, or just like it's something else other than murder because of the language that she uses and her bizarre belief systems that don't jive with reality.
You hit the nail on the head. I think there are potentially viable defenses here in terms of, you know, what does this coded, veiled religious language mean? And you know, the prosecution has to prove that Lori had an intent to kill Charles Vallow. And on top of that, you know, Alex Cox is deceased. He's the other co-conspirator. And so it'd be pretty darn easy for a skilled attorney to argue that, hey, this was all Alex's doing. In fact, he pulled the trigger. Lori never wanted to kill this guy. She's a little eccentric, but that doesn't make her a murderer. Can Lori pull off such an argument to a jury? That's a different question.
Another interesting angle to this, and I'm wondering if it would be different if the tables were turned, if Charles was the crazy one and Lori was the sane one, because Charles talked to police multiple times, told them so many things about how she's not mentally well, how she has these bizarre beliefs, how she's, you know, threatening to kill people and him and all this stuff. And it really, I don't want to say it fell on deaf ears, but I mean, I don't know that they had a whole lot of recourse of what they could do. Was there anything in this part of the case? I have a lot of issues with the other part of the case and police response initially, that they could have done to prevent this, or legally were the authorities' hands tied based on what was known and based on what she had done up to that point that we knew of when he's out there saying, she's saying she wants to kill me, basically.
Yeah, definitely some scary stuff alleged before Charles Vallow actually perished. And like you said, he indicated that he thinks Lori wanted to harm him and also that Lori wanted to harm the children. Mm-hmm. And this is before the children had been killed.
Yeah.
And so, gosh, it'd be great if there was some sort of law enforcement intervention that could have taken place. But, you know, do these allegations rise to the level of a crime. In order to prove something like or arrest somebody for making threats, usually there has to be what are called actual threats. There has to be a bona fide, genuine, supported belief that a person might follow through on these threats. And I think police at the time concluded that there wasn't enough there to bring some sort of arrest based on just threats that Charles Vallow is telling us occurred.
Is it, again, but if it was the other way around, and this is just conjecture, if she's going to police saying, my husband is threatening to kill me, this and that, in most cases, I would think Charles would be locked up fairly quickly. Because it's the other way around, was it looked at differently? Just because, you know, she was female, he was male, and that seems to be how that tends to work. Not saying right or wrong. I'm saying it's wrong. It is wrong because it's a double standard. And the risk is just as intense either way. But is that an issue here where, I mean, obviously it's not something that's going to be coming up in this trial, but I think something that really should be criticized in this whole case is the police handling of the information they got at the time. She could really play it off well. We've seen the videos, the body cam footage of, oh no, it's just this or that. And she did present herself in a very positive light. It's just a misunderstanding. And he could have done the same too, but would it have worked out the same way?
You know, it's a totally fair question. The promise is equal justice under the law, mm-hmm. but is that always how it plays out? It's just not.
No.
You know, the police are going to look at relationship dynamics. They're going to look at the characteristics of the parties involved. And perhaps they look at this and say, hey, you know, this husband, he's kind of a formidable dude. He's not like a small shrimp or something.
No.
And, you know, if he says, hey, his little, you know, blonde wife is threatening him, is that going to be viewed the same as if Lori said, hey, my, you know, Charles Vallow, who's pretty significant mm-hmm. dude, is threatening her? I'm not sure it would be viewed the same. And right or wrong, the police did not intervene. And now here we are multiple deaths later.
And that was the big issue. When I first heard of this story several years ago, I think it was Dateline. And that was the first thing that stood out to me, was how long it took for police to intervene and arrest them, or at least question them, when the children were missing. And I know this is not about the kids in this trial, but it all kind of comes together. How long can your kids be missing and you don't have to prove that they exist before they step in and go, we're going to take you into custody. Produce your kids, never producing the kids, like months. Like, that seemed to be a bit extreme. Was this just something, when we look back on it retrospectively, that just kind of slipped through the cracks, as so many cases do? I mean, we look at the foster care system, we look at all of that, and there's many times where these kids just slip through the cracks. Is this just another one of those that ended up getting such a larger spotlight on it because of how heinous the crime was?
You know, whenever there is a child who's alleged to be in harm's way, you always want prompt governmental intervention under those circumstances. Usually what that might look like is social services mm-hmm. coming out, paying visits to the parents, and collecting evidence, collecting information. You know, if the parents say something that they can't back up, well, that is suspicious. If they say something that's demonstrably false, that's even more suspicious. It's easy to say in hindsight that other things should have been done, of course, but the hope is that there is valid governmental intervention that protects children and ultimately prevents this kind of thing from happening. And there have been cases where social services intervened and the children get out of a really mm-hmm. dangerous situation. That's not what happened here.
Well, and they just took her at her word. Like, oh, they're over there. Okay, ma'am. You know, I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot of proof that she had to make. I mean, you had the Woodcocks calling and saying, hey, my grandkids are missing. I don't think this is right, over and over and over. And okay, well, let us go look into it. Oh, she says that they're fine. Case closed. That seems to be how this went. And again, on the this case with Charles Vallow, it was self-defense. Took him at his word. Were you surprised that there wasn't any sort of investigation into this, especially with the fact that there was body cam video of Charles saying to police, she's going to try to kill me, and then he ends up dead?
One of the first things as a former prosecutor that I would look at if there was a domestic violence related murder allegation is I pull all of the police history in terms of contacts with their property. Have the police ever had to go out to the home before? Have there been prior reported disturbances? Has anyone reported a threat, which Charles Vallow did report? You know, you look into those things because on the scene, you know, when you have a dead guy and the person who shot him and the person who shot him says, hey, this was self-defense. Well, the dead guy can't speak for himself. And so the prosecutor and law enforcement needs to look into the history of that relationship and see if it is in line with or negates what the shooter on scene is saying. And here, there would have been some real questions had that full history been procured.
I would question, you know, anything in this jurisdiction, you know, because this is not obviously the only case where you have domestic concerns of one being scared for their life of their partner. And if this is how they handled this one, how are other ones being handled? I'm not saying that the police, you know, need to be charged or anything like that. I mean, that's nearly impossible to begin with. But seriously, take a look at these policies and how these things have been handled, because obviously a lot of people ended up dead where I feel like there was a lot of opportunity to intervene and stop this mad woman and her crazy husband from going down the road that they did.
Domestic violence situations have a heightened likelihood of lethality. Unfortunately, those just result in murders more often than, you know, a bar fight or two friends or two guys who don't like each other or something. And so you've got to approach those very sensitively. In fact, in Colorado, where I practice, there's a list of lethality factors that we look at and we say, hey, what are the chances that if we don't do something firm here, this is going to escalate to a death? And some of those factors appear to have been present in the prior disturbance between Charles Vallow and Lori Vallow Daybell, including threats to kill somebody and also just sort of a detachment from reality. It's unclear to me how closely those things were looked at.
One more thing on the trial that's coming up. And there's a lot of talk of her taking the stand, possibly with herself being her own attorney. How does that work?
Painfully. It's going to be something where Lori Vallow gets up. Some judges require the pro se person to like ask themselves a question, then answer it. I don't think this judge is going to think that she can do that. So the judge is probably going to allow her to kind of testify in a narrative fashion. We're probably going to hear about just wild otherworldly stuff, deities and dimensions and an upcoming apocalypse. And how is the jury going to view that when she's on trial for murder?
Do you cross her at that point? Just let her, after she's done everything and said all that, do you just like, yeah, you got anything in prosecution? No, I'm good. Or do you? Do you dig into that? Do you double down and go, let's hear more?
Yeah, if it were me, I'd probably double down, in part because she's so inclined to vocalize everything she's feeling, and she's so resolute in what she believes to be her reality, that I, you know, she sort of set herself up, and then as cross-examination, I would let her keep doing it. I would just let her go. And the jury over time might conclude, hey, this person is a problem, and they are capable of murder, and this is a murder trial.
It's going to be fascinating, without a doubt. Do you think we get to a conclusion and a verdict, or do you predict this is going to end up collapsing on itself in some way, shape, or form?
The judge has a Herculean effort to ensure that this case proceeds as properly as possible, and that there is some kind of finality, there is some verdict, and I trust that the judge has thought about this and has measures in place towards that end. And I think it's likely we will get a verdict. And I don't think Lori Vallow Daybell is going anywhere anytime soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.